Big hand for my friends, Giorgio and Mark. Woo! Were you amazed? Was it magic? So the emerging experiences track is something brand new we're trying. We want to see if you guys like it. And if you'll attend some of the sessions, let us know what you think. We care a lot about your feedback. You guys make this show. You are the ones who tell us what you want with your evals, with the forms that we ask you to fill in. That's why we give away swag around it, is we really want to know what you want and make the show better every time. This is one of our experiments. I hope you guys like us. Let us know one way or the other. I'm not introducing you. There's no point.
I made it here, though.
You did make it here, and it was dramatic.
Do they know what happened?
Do you guys follow Twitter? You watch his drama today? So, airlines.
It was bad. I left Portland at 4 in the morning. I got here at 5:15.
5:15 this evening, yes.
So, yeah, I rode my bicycle. I got stuck in, it was the weirdest thing. I got stuck in San Francisco, and I texted my boss. I'm like, there's low cloud cover, and it's causing a ground stop. So then my boss, wherever he is, one of the many Scots above me that tells me what to do, he doesn't reply with, oh, that sucks, I'm so sorry to hear. He sends me a weather radar that says, it looks clear here. So then I send him a screenshot of the FAA's actual website.
Yeah.
And then he starts to send me like links to the Illuminati and about how like they're trying to keep me from getting to Vegas. Anyway, I made it though, but it was really, really, really challenging.
And you almost broke your leg.
And then I almost broke my leg because it turns out my shoes are leather and I thought they were rubber.
There you go.
Yeah, so there you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is my friend Scott Hatzelman.
Yeah, cool. Cool, let's put my computer up there. So, wow, I am not really clear how, I think Giorgio and Pete have set me up for failure. Let's just be serious here. They've got a magical Xbox, they're giving away surfaces to people, he's going like this, and he's got, there's no way I can compete with that at all, so I'm just gonna do it in Notepad. There's just no other way. It's just I'm gonna have to go there, and also, I'll be doing it while my computer is installing Gears of War, because the internet at the hotel is, you know, not so much. But then they hooked up wired internet here, and it looks like it's working out pretty well. So it's only another 80 gigs, so I'll just let that go while we're doing this. That should work out well for everyone, especially when the antivirus decides that 80 gigs needs to be looked at. All right. Yes. All right. Let's talk about .NET. Let's talk about open source. Talk about ASP.NET. Let me see if the marketing team has given me any slides. That's not too bad. Does that work? There you go. It is kind of like that. It's like a bunch of stormtroopers running around the Death Star with no management. And we're just trying not to blow up Alderaan again. But it works out pretty well. Now, you may have seen the announcements about open sourcing .NET, right? Did you notice the date? This is the third or fourth time we've done it. I think this time it's going to stick. We like to mess things up every couple of years. But we're doing it to make things better. Any of my old people here? Any active server pages people here? Yeah. Isn't it funny how, like, in 96, that when some of you were born, and when I was teaching this stuff, it took 40 hours of training full time. Like, you just did a workshop today for a day. I took 40 hours to teach people five objects. You know, it's like request, response, session, cache, application. Somewhere around Wednesday, they'd be like, wait a second, well, where's the code running? Is it in the browser or is it on the server? It took 40 hours to teach people five objects. And now we have to teach them everything in noun.js and all the different things. It's very, very overwhelming. But what we've got now is a pretty sweet base here, which is ASP.NET Core 1.0 and .NET Core 1.0. I'm going to talk to you, though, about how we got here and what happened, and I'm going to do some of it in Notepad. So, there was a time when Scott Guthrie was in charge of stuff, and he was kind of like the Azure person. Azure is a really great word. Did you know what that means? You know that Azure is the color of a cloudless sky. We should totally name our cloud after that. I thought it was a made-up word. That is literally what it means. Like, the Azure sky. All right. Seems like a good idea. Then you remember Soma, right? Visual Studio person. We have Soma. And then we had Rich Lander. I think Rich is around here somewhere in like .NET team. And then we've got Guthrie going off doing Azure stuff. And then we had Scott Hunter, who was doing ASP.NET. And then we came up with this new ASP.NET, right? ASP.NET 5. Remember that? About a minute ago? Some people just heard about it today, so now it's going to go away. Why did we call it ASP.NET 5? Well, because 5 is greater than 4.6, right? That was the sum total of the thought that was put into that. It seemed like a really good idea at the time. It's important to point this out, though, because from an org chart perspective, right, you've got Satya, Scott, Nadella, right? We put ASP.NET organizationally underneath the Azure group. That's how it was. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Azure was coming up, and it's a web thing. Of course, we put the web framework that powers the portal and powers a lot of stuff on Azure in that group. What failed? I got a frowny face. Maybe Gears of War was a mistake. No fear. This is why true professionals have their Nintendo 3DS and their backup laptop. Which also happens to be disguised as a composition notebook. It's in fact a Surface. You don't have to clap that, but that's okay. If you want a really weak clapping, that's fine. I did that as a disguise so no one would steal it. But it's a Surface, so no one's going to steal it. So, no, I'm just playing. It's like my Windows phone that I left at the airport. I'm not worried about it. It'll be there later this week. It's jokes like that are going to get me fired. You know what, if we can't joke at ourselves, then who can we joke at, right? All right, I got the backup Surface, but this with the power of the Intel Pentium processor, I can reboot faster than ever. I had a lot of stuff going on there, though. I had Docker, I had Gears of War in the background, I had Hyper-V. What else did I have going on? A bunch of mistakes, a bunch of bad ideas. But it's okay. That's what you get of running daily builds of everything. Okay, now we're over here. But now last one came back up. Oh, and then Notepad, of course, didn't save what I was doing. What is Notepad good for, anyway? Notepad is good for stopping servers from rebooting. You ever have that happen? You never had that happen? This is when you have Notepad running, and then you have some text, and then Windows tries to reboot, and then it's like, no. You cannot reboot that server yet. You have to save that text file. It's the only thing that can stop Windows. Other than Gears of War. What in the world was that about? I took a daily build of, that's always comforting too. It's fine. This is fine. Probably Dropbox. Who knows? Let's just see if we can make this reboot again. Okay, where were we? Don't worry, we'll fix it all in post. It's not like we're live streaming. Okay. So, boss, Soma, VS, rich.net, Guthrie, Cloudy, Hunter, ASP.net, me, MISC. That basically means whatever Guthrie wants done. Okay, so we go, I'm going to save this file. You never know, you know. I'll end up taking a build of Windows. I'm on the insider, whatever, you know. What am I on right now? Some kind of build of something. Yeah, that was probably smart to take that build before I got on a plane. And Notepad's gone. See, I told you it could stop anything. Did I not exactly call that? I'm actually using Notepad 2, which is better than Notepad, apparently, because it's way stronger. Yeah, that's fine. This is a talk about .NET. We're just going to go out to the DOS prompt at this point. I'm going to leave that computer alone for a while. I have no idea what's going on. I think it decided that this was the time to do check disk and defrag all at the same time. That's fine. Now I wish I could copy paste from that other. Have we typed this enough? All right, let's talk about this. We should just start and reintroduce me again. You realize, of course, God does not want this presentation to succeed. The weather, the disk access, all related to the election. All right. What the hell am I trying to talk about? We called it ASP.NET 5 because 5 is greater than 4.6, but when we did it, we didn't realize that when we decided to make it cross-platform, we were going to create a new hosting model, right? How does ASP.NET get hosted now, right? It gets hosted kind of in IIS, and it was very married to IIS, and you have like ASP.NET, WP, and all that kind of IIS-y stuff, right? But one of the goals was cross-platform, so we made a new hosting model, and it was called DNX. Remember the .NET execution environment, and then there's the utilities, and then the version manager. And it was confusing, and we were figuring it out, but you asked for us to do it in the open, so we did it in the open, and that's what happens when you do things in the open. It's kind of scary. But here's the thing. Two things happened, one that you knew about, and one that you probably did not know about. Do you remember what those two things are? What's one thing that totally, what's a world-changing, Microsoft-changing thing that happened that nobody saw coming? I found out about it when I read it on TechCrunch. We bought Xamarin. I didn't know that. Like, they don't tell us this stuff. There were like two people who knew that that was going on. So one day we bought Xamarin. You know, when we bought LinkedIn, you know how I found out about how we bought LinkedIn? Guthrie added me on LinkedIn. I woke up one morning and I was like, Okay. And I imagined that he was there with the CEO of LinkedIn, and then he slid a bag of money across, you know, I don't know. I assumed that it was some kind of, they were far, like, you know, same time, man, same time. And they pushed the money, and then they made him add, so he added me, of course. And then I was like, why did Guthrie add me on LinkedIn? Is he looking for a job? And then an hour later, like, oh, we bought LinkedIn. I'm like, totally called it. Okay, the second thing, so that's thing number one. We bought Xamarin. That changed things. Then, number two, you did not know about this, reorg. Had a reorg. Remember how we had Azure and ASP.NET, and then we had DevDiv and .NET? Made sense at the time, but if we're off here going with a new thing, that really is going to become a whole new cross-platform platform.net. I'm not much of a typer. That belongs somewhere else. So we had kind of a Game of Thrones.net kind of thing that happened, and some people left. Soma retired. Julia is in charge of DevDiv now, and she's awesome. So then you've got Julia up here, and then ASP.net left Azure. Again, you don't care about this, but I'm explaining to you how this all happened because it's important. So now we've got ASP.net and .NET together with Scott Hunter being the Scott for that thing. And then there's like other Scots. There's like three other Scots underneath, including me. Azure's doing their own thing. And then we said, well, is ASP.NET 5 greater than 4.6? Is it a new ASP.NET or is it a new .NET completely? So then we called it Core 1.0 because it is pared down to its essence, right? The core of .NET, what made .NET great was that runtime. But we wanted to build it on a on the base of a pyramid that included Roslyn, the open source compilers for C# and VB, open source compilers for F#. We wanted to build it on a jitter that had many years of research behind it. We wanted to build on top of garbage collector that was time tested and trusted. So it made sense to bring those things together. Therefore, we had to reboot the versioning. Okay? That can be a little bit confusing to people. So let's go, because I'm on another computer now, and let's find some slides, because this computer is running check disk. I think my disk is failing, is what's going on, by the way. Blah, blah, blah. Here we go. This is a lovely slide. When the tale of this presentation gets told, I hope that you say that he saved it famously. Unless that machine dies, and then I'm on my iPad at that point, and who knows what's going to happen. So we bought Xamarin. That's the new world for .NET. We've got mobile applications. So we've got Windows apps, which is .NET full framework. We've got cross-platform services, which is .NET Core. We've got the mobile apps on the right, which is Xamarin. Okay? And you see here that I probably... Oh, that's because the clicky is on that computer. Look at this. This will be taught in classes about how not to give a presentation, which is just... I'm happy to just give it back to the people to say, this is the worst talk that I've ever given. There you go. Clicky. Cool. So the .NET framework is Windows, the .NET Core is cross-platform services, and Xamarin is the mobile applications. And what we want to build on top of that, is this thing called the .NET Standard Library. This is the goal. What I'm showing you here is the destination. It is the direction that we're heading. Are there any Android people in the room? Any Android developers? A little bit? No? A couple? So you know how Android, there's like 50 bazillion Android phones, right? When you write an Android app, you don't target the Nexus this and the Pixel that and the Huawei whatever, because there's too many. Like in the amount of time it took me to say that, two new Android phones just came out. It's that crazy. So what you do is you target an API level. You draw a line across your APIs and you say, I need support for this feature. And then that API level gets a number. Could be API level 10, API level 15, whatever. That API level then speaks to what Android phone you can use. So you say, my app supports API level 14. That's a good number that supports a lot of Android phones. And then you just have to deal with screen sizes and stuff like that. Then the .NET Standard Library is going to try to do that for us. We're going to have a versioning scheme for the .NET Standard Library that is going to be separate from these other things. Because if we told you, hey, do you want to support .NET Core 1.0 and Xamarin blah, 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 and .NET 4.6, that's confusing. You'll say, I'm going to support the .NET Standard 2, and that'll support these things. Or I want to go back all the way to, you know, Windows 7, and I want it all just to be .NET. Then instead of saying, I'm going to target that version of the .NET framework and that version of the .NET framework, you'll say, I'll support .NET Standard 1.3 or 1.6. And then the common infrastructure underneath will be the same whether you're writing Windows apps or whatever. Now let's talk about the full framework for a second. ASP.NET 4.6 came out in last November, and it's great. and it's got web forms, and Jeff Fritz was here doing a workshop on Core, and he works on web forms. He's adding some new cool stuff for JavaScript support on web forms. You've got MVC and Web API. One of the things a lot of people don't realize is that ASP.NET Core 1.0 runs on top of full framework. This is like the one confusing thing about this versioning style. This is the new ASP.NET, but it's not on top, right? It's not 5 anymore, because it's actually a step backwards and kind of a fork in a different direction. But you have choice. If you hear about .NET Core and you think, oh, I want to port things to Core, I want to get onto Core right away, the Core is going to be great, but you're a Windows shop and you have no need to move to Core and go cross-platform, and you know, you want the modularity and the middleware platform within ASP.NET, but you don't really care so much about the runtime, you can totally run on the .NET Framework 4.6. When you say File New Project, you just pick that. And you're going to be running on the same runtime components, the same open source compilers that everyone else gets to use. Now, here's where things get interesting. See how ASP.NET Core 1.0 spans across two runtimes. This slide right here is the only thing that your boss needs to understand. This is the one you take pictures of because it really kind of says it all. .NET Core 1.0 runs on Mac, Linux, and Windows, and ASP.NET Core can run on either one. You just target the one that makes you happy. So when we think about Core, we have to think about what its goal was, right? Fast, modular, cross-platform. Let's look at an example. Like, let's say I want to access the registry. So I'm going to use .NET APIs that are registry-specific, like Microsoft.win32.registrykey or whatever. That's available on .NET Framework 4.6. I can totally call that from ASP.NET Core 1.0. Can I access the registry from .NET Core 1.0? Doesn't really make sense, right? Because it's running on Mac and Linux or a Raspberry Pi or whatever, right? Things that are specific to a platform are not going to come with .NET Core 1.0. So you have to ask yourself, what are the APIs that I'm calling, and then do I have those available to me? And we're doing all of this in the open, so you can start with ASP.NET Core 1.0, you can target .NET Framework 4.6, and then you can watch as we develop .NET Core in the open. You can look at the APIs that we're continuing to add to the .NET standard, and when you get the level of API support that makes you happy, then you can go and move your stuff over or port very easily over to run on cross-platform. Now, all of this is open source. .NET Framework 4.6 is more source-opened because it's no take-backs. You know, you can't give us patches because it ships, kind of ships with Windows. But all this ASP.NET, .NET Core, the core libraries, Roslyn, it's all open source. This causes people that work for big companies or work for the government or work for, you know, some big boss, not a startup, to have questions about, like, how is this supported? I don't really feel comfortable with this. Microsoft's going open source. I don't know if my company wants to do open source, or what should I tell my boss about open source? You forget, though, that when we ship something with Visual Studio that you have purchased or that you have a license to, if you have something like Visual Studio Community, you're not just getting a cloned copy of some open source, like, hey, here's some open source. It's going to be great. And then you have to think about that. You're getting fully supported licensed software from Microsoft, and when you call support, you will get support. So here's the analogy that Damian Edwards uses, and I love this analogy. And if you're a vegan, I apologize, because it's a steak-based analogy. You could pretend that it was like one of those big, funky-looking mushrooms if you want to. How do you like your portobello mushroom? So if you get a well-done steak, it is very unlikely that you will die of, salmonella or whatever you get when you eat raw meat. It's reliable. You just use Visual Studio, you get your DLLs and stuff, and your libraries from NuGet.org, and you probably won't get fired. This is the well-done steak. It might be tasteless, but it totally works. The point is, though, that it's reliable, right? If you're working for a big corporate company and your boss says, I have no patience for risk, give me the fully supported stuff. Yes, it may have had an open source core. It may have come from open source. People in the audience here may have contributed to it, because almost 60% of .NET Core libraries now, pull requests come from third parties. But we run all of that code through the system exactly the same way as if a Microsoft person did it. So whether you're a Microsoft person or whether you're a person in the front row here, if you make a pull request, it goes through the same security checks. It goes through the same geographic checks and poly checks and things like that. We look for your swear words in the comments. We remove the swear words. We do all the important stuff so that when you buy Visual Studio, you get reliable software. Now, if you want to be a little risky, you could go medium well. Get a CTP or a beta with a go-live license. Or maybe get a little more risky. I think it's quite tasty. Go medium. Maybe like MyGet rather than NuGet. So these would be CI drops, continuous integration drops of the .NET framework or of ASP.NET. Things start getting really interesting, and this is where I'm trying to get my wife to eat a medium rare steak. My wife eats well done. She says, kill it. I want it to be gray. I don't think that's what you should do to meat. I like it medium rare. Build from the source, right? Or use a dev branch. As you go farther and farther to the risky side of buying a steak, maybe you're going to pick a feature branch. Like you want a specific feature that the compiler is going to have, or you have a favorite dev, and you're going to watch that person's stuff and build from source. Are you going to get support? Less so, right? Hey, it's me, Aflac, and we built Roslyn from scratch, and we did it all ourselves, and we made a couple of changes, right? We made, you know, fancy pants a keyword for C#. That's cool, right? Support's probably not going to want to be your friend, okay? Because you built it from source. You bought rare meat. You died. I'm sorry. Don't come back to Chipotle. There's another kind of meat before rare, I just found out, because people in Vegas like their steak. Do you know what it is? It's blue. What is that? They basically just smack the cow in the butt and send it out. Like, you get a steak, my boss gets a blue steak, and it's like a good doctor could bring it back. They could, like, harvest the memories of the animal from the steak. That's how. This is when you're doing something like, you know, building from source or a third party fork. Where did you get your .NET? Did you buy it with Visual Studio? No, I got Scott.NET. Right? This is the one where I just take .NET, fork it, change all the namespaces to Scott, and then send it out again. All right? You're not going to get as much support if you do that. So you got to be aware of those kinds of things. You get to decide, though, okay? You can go and build Windows apps on the reliable .NET framework 4.6, 4.6.2. It's going to continue to get developed. You're going to be able to do all kinds of cool stuff with Windows apps. That means WPF, and that means ASP.NET, and you're going to get all of the CLR improvements and all of that base of the pyramid, Roslyn and memory management, all that stuff exists on the Windows.NET framework. But with .NET Core, what you get is all of that stuff plus cross-platform and extremely fast. We're going to have some exciting benchmarks that we're going to announce later this year with benchmarks you're going to be able to run and test yourself that is going to show it to be many times faster than Node and faster than Go. Super lightweight. Now you see right there it says no impact deployment. Let's talk about no impact deployment because that can be a little bit scary sometimes. Let me go back over here on this machine that is a backup but totally not ready for me to do what I need to do. But that's fine because I'm rolling with it. Where is .NET? Well, .NET is there, right? When you think of .NET or the .NET full framework, it's in the Windows folder. It's always been there, right? It's in C, Windows, .NET, and you can see the individual versions. You learned this the day that you learned .NET and you stopped caring about it, right? But for Windows.NET, for the full framework, it basically ships with Windows, right? There was a time when you would go and download the .NET runtime, but you really haven't done that in a while, have you? Have you even thought about that? The only time you really go and download .NET is when you want to run paint.NET, right? And paint.NET says, I need a certain version, and then your non-technical parent calls you and says, I really want to run this paint program. What do I need to do? Oh, you go and run .NET. I don't know how to do that. And then you say, oh, just run the Windows update, because .NET comes through Windows update now. The problem, though, with tying .NET, directly or indirectly, to Windows is that we're now afraid of it, aren't we? let's say that this nice gentleman here writes an expense reporting app in .NET 4.0, works great, installs it, likes it, it's been reliable, it's been running for years. He is a happy .NET customer, works great, and he has it hosted on his server. Then let's say that this young lady has .NET 4.6.2 because that's how she rolls. She likes the new hotness. She wants the new C# features. She wants the new no reference exception stuff, all the newest features. She writes an app, runs great on her machine. Cool. She goes to him and says, I'm going to put .NET 4.6.2 on your machine. It's great. You're going to love it. And he's like, whoa, 4.0 is fine. My machine runs fine. This app is fine. Like, don't destabilize my system. Now, it probably won't, right? Until it totally does, right? It's 99.5% not, you know, having a problem until it's 0.5%. But if it happens to you, then it feels like 100%, right? So then you just have fear. And then what happens is years go by, right? .NET is on version 12. Chrome is on version 666 or whatever. Chrome is updated while I was talking. She's quit and become a Ruby developer because he won't let her be great. She's gone off and she's doing new stuff because other platforms allow you to have the runtime be separate. And now he's on an older platform. Why do we have that situation now? It's because .NET is effectively tied to Windows and we don't really have a side-by-side story because we didn't want to keep shipping 250 meg side-by-side CLRs, right? So enter .NET Core. Let's go and do this because I like DOS. I love the DOS. I like DOS too because in Windows 10, it's not really DOS, the command prompt. You can go Alt-Enter, which is cool, right? Makes you go full screen. And it's like, what does it have? It's resizable, which is nice. And then you can go four-finger swipe, which is cool. I know people who bought a Mac just so they could do that. I'm like, really? You're going to have to buy all your software over again and have to do a whole other ecosystem? Yeah, but I could do the four-finger thing. That's in Windows now, too, but no one knows it. But now you know it because I just told you. And then I like to go like this sometimes. In DOS and just, oops, what's going on there? Go away. Ah! Just to freak people out. Like, what's that? Is that Windows 10? Is that a new feature? And the young people want to know about that new feature that I pushed F7. That's actually DOS 4.0. But the young people, you tell the young people that it's Windows 10. It's new, brand spanking new, has not been around since 1987. It's not something that you don't use. And then you do push D just to make them go, what's push D? What is he doing? What's happening? And then pop D just because I have no idea what that does. Okay, so I'm going to type .NET at the command line. And that's cool. So I'm going to type where.NET because no one knows about where except for really old people. And it says where it is because it's which on Linux because we do things differently at Microsoft. It says, where's .NET? .NET is in program files. Okay, that's cool. So let me make a fancy directory. And it's empty right now. I'm going to say .NET new. And now there's stuff in it, right? And I'm going to open up program.js and Notepad, which is awesome. I'm going to make it as small as it can be. There we go. And I'm going to say console, because I do all my programming in Notepad. It's good. I'm going to say console.readline, so it'll write out hello world, and then it will pause on readline, okay? And I'm going to say .NET restore, because that's cool. .NET restore is effectively NuGet install, or NPM install, if that's how you roll. And then I'll say .NET run, and it's going to compile it. And it's like, oh no, what happened? Compiled it, right? It actually worked, which is cool. Also shows you that Notepad is probably not the best option for doing this kind of work, which is cool. So then I'm going to say .NET run. So it ran, right? So then I'm going to go to Task Manager. And I'm going to look for .NET. And where's .NET? And then I'm going to be really disappointed in Task Manager because it sucks. I'm going to close it. And I'm going to go to Process Explorer because that's how real programmers do their work. because it's got its color. And it's got a tree. I'm going to look for .net. Remember, it's still running, right? Why is it still running? It's because I said read line. Here we go. Here's command. Here's .net. There it is. Where is it? There's two of them. Why is there two? There's the one that started it all, and then there's the other one that has more information. That's interesting. Why is there two .nets? Well, remember earlier when I said .net version, that's the version, 3.1.3.1. Now, the preview means that the tooling is in preview, but the runtime's actually for real. So I'm going to go here to Program Files, and we'll go to .net. Cool. What's going on in here? That's where .net is. And in fact, I could delete .net by deleting that folder. And I could add .net by dragging stuff into that folder. So this is a truly xcopy deployable .net. And you could go and in a global.json file, which tells you which version of the SDK to use, say, I want .net to be this version of the SDK. And this means that then she can use whatever version makes her happy. She can pack it up into a single folder and publish it, including all of .NET as a self-contained folder, and then put it on his machine, and it will just run. Not only that, if she wanted to have a blue steak or a medium rare steak, and she's going to ship her app not just with ASP.NET Core and not just with .NET Core, but a custom feature build of Roslyn because her app has special needs like that, or because she wanted to fix a bug in MVC, she should be able to do that without destabilizing his machine. You can have as many .NETs as you want on a machine, as many SDKs as you want, use whatever libraries that make you happy, target whatever makes you happy, and when you type .NET at the command line, it'll look in the folder you're in and pick the right one. So you could have two DOS boxes open, run .NET and get one version, have another DOS box open and run .NET and see another version, and it'll just work. So that's kind of the promise of what we're trying to do. And when you package it up, you've got your own .NET. But remember, right now, I said before that we are a little afraid of .NET, right? We're afraid because it's big. It's 200 megs, right? Or 250 megs. But when we target the .NET standard, what we're going to hope to do in the next 6 months to a year or so is this really cool feature called tree trimming, which means that we're going to look at your .NET and look at your dependencies, and we're going to shake the tree so that all of the stuff that you don't need, all of the APIs that you don't call, we won't even ship those. So then if you were going to package that up in like a Docker container, it'll be tiny. Maybe we can get it down to 100 megs or something, the entire Docker container. Maybe we can get down to 50. Who knows, right? This means that server density, you know, you can go and have a whole application running and have multiple instances of it running in containers in Docker and have that running on whatever operating system that makes you happy and have no impact to your deployments. And then, of course, when let's say that she's running ASP.NET MVC with a custom version, you know, she built her own ASP.NET core, and then it gets fixed, she can go and fix that. Drop it back in. Again, affects no one but her application. All of it's open source. All of it developed in the open. Blah, 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 marketing, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. There's a lot of stuff happening in the open, and if you watch it in the open, you will get stressed out. Okay? A lot of people may follow on Twitter, and they see that names are changing and libraries are changing, and it's stressing you out. That's because you're watching that current up at the top there. Like, for example, we just put out a preview of .NET Core 1.1 with new libraries and hundreds of new APIs. That might be stressing you out. That is a current version. You don't have to know about that, right? Like, I realize that I am not caught up on Game of Thrones. There's just too many. They're coming at me too fast. I can't deal with it. So what I do is I watch the ones that people say are good, and then I watch the recaps. What you do is you think about .NET in terms of long-term support. .NET 1.0 gets long-term support. And then when 1.1 or 1. Whatever is next comes out, it will have long-term support. If you're familiar with how Ubuntu ships their Linuxes, there's always a new Ubuntu coming out, but the long-term support one they snap to every year or so. And then that gets lots of long-term support. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep building .NET fast and furious and having all sorts of fun, and you're welcome to join us if it makes you happy. But if it's stressing you out, just snap to the LTS or the long-term support version, and you'll get 3 years of support and regular updates. Does that make sense? And this way, you can mix and match your strategy even on the same machine. So in the scenario that I just described with these very nice people in the front row, he's LTS, he's long-term support, which means low risk, reliable updates, get security updates, everything works great. She wants to stay on current, and you know, incur some of the risk, and then it's supported as long as she's always on latest. If she feels that that's going too fast, she snaps to LTS, and she doesn't have to sweat it for 3 years. It's a really nice balance, because if you think about that first example where you've got people having blue steak and people having well-done steak, that is literally what I do when I go out with my wife to have steak. She is a long-term support type person. She wants to incur no risk. That's cool. I'm eating raw meat. That's cool as well. Kind of affects our marriage. That's a longer conversation. But the point is that we get to go to the same restaurant, right? Does that make sense? And here's what you can do, is you can explain this to your bosses. Because these kinds of explanations, what I'm trying to express to you right here about .NET Core and .NET and where we're trying to take it, this stuff doesn't fit into a tweet, does it? So when you hear people with negativity about, oh, blah, 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 well, it's kind of complicated. But you give me 15, 20 minutes, I'll explain it to you, and you'll go, oh, why didn't you say so? Well, 140 characters, didn't really work. Kind of challenging to express it like that, okay? Now, what about Xamarin? What about Mono? Mono's fantastic. We love Mono. Mono and Xamarin and all the technology within that, that's part of Microsoft now. So we're going to take cool stuff from the Mono team. We're going to take cool stuff from the Xamarin technology, like that tree trimming thing that we talked about. That's going to be Xamarin technology that makes that happen. But when I learn C# or when I learn .NET, right now, it kind of feels a little constrained. It feels like, well, I learned WinForms. What about me? Or I only learned WebForms. What we want people to learn is the .NET standard library, and we want you to feel empowered by it. I want to be able to feel like I'm a C# programmer and I learned that, and that made me an Android developer, an iOS developer, because that rich set of libraries is available everywhere. It's on UWP apps, it's on Windows apps, like we saw Pete and Giorgio talk about, and I know that stuff. Like back in the day when we learned the BCL, the base class library, that was a lot of cool stuff. But then when we went to cross-platform, we learned PCLs, portable class libraries, and it felt like they didn't have a lot of meat there. It felt like if you wanted to be really cross-platform, there wasn't enough API surface. We're going to expand that, and the .NET standard library is going to make that happen. And then we want you to have a great experience, whether you're using Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, or Xamarin Studio. Okay? So you're going to have one library that you learn, one API to rule them all, and you'll want to be able to reuse that across as many platforms as possible. That's why things got a little bit interesting and why ASP.NET 5 kind of backed up and took a 20,000-foot view and came up with this idea of the .NET standard. Now, .NET standard 2, when that comes out, that's going to be the big deal. That's going to be the one that is going to be support all this new stuff. There are already .NET standards like 1.6 and 1.0. The reason that we started with 2 and kind of went backward like that was to make sure that we can support PCLs and target frameworks like Windows 7. It's a very straightforward model. And let me show you actually where you can go and see it online. Again, everything is done out in the open. The good thing about that is that no, there's no secrets, but the bad thing is that it's a little bit scary. .NET Standard Library. I'm going to go out there and Bing with Google or whatever, and zoom in on this. Okay, so anytime something has to be explained by a table, people usually freak out. But at the same time, it expresses a lot. So let's just take a brief moment and freak out looking at this table. Remember how I said you're going to pick an API level, and that's going to make you feel powerful. If you pick .NET Standard 2.0, it'll support .NET 4.6.1 and newer, and the next versions of all this stuff. If I decide that I want to make a library, and I'm going to have that library be .NET Standard 1, that's going to work in all of these places. That is the most compatible .NET Standard library. So this is going to be really nice for you, though, because when I say, well, is that a standard library? And you'll be like, yeah. I don't have to say, does it support Xamarin? Does it support Windows Phone? Does it support .NET Core? You just say, I made a standard library. So then your company and your division and your group within your company can give standard libraries to other groups and rest assured that it will work in as many places as possible. But if you, as the library author, decide, oh, well, I really want this one API, or we need XML, or whatever, so I'm going to need to pick a specific version, you can see clearly where Windows 8.1 stops being supported. If you decide to support .NET Standard 1.6, it cuts off a little bit. And then you decide. That table explains that. And what's nice is that when you compare this to portable class libraries, PCLs, or portable class libraries, were kind of an intersection. It was like, here's the thing that we could support. Here's the lowest common denominator if we drew a bunch of Venn diagrams and said, well, there's the littlest stuff we could support. .NET Standard is going to do the exact opposite of that and try to make it so we can support as much as possible. So if you found, as you've tried to port or move your existing .NET framework libraries over, that's not had enough support, hang in there. We're going to continue to add APIs so that the .NET Standard library looks as much like the BCL that you know and love, with the caveat that, you know, there's no registry on Linux and things like that. So Windows-specific APIs you're going to need to deal with. But this means that your code is going to become extremely portable and not just work on Windows, Macs, and Linux, but also on basically anything else that we can think of, which is pretty sweet. Okay? One other thing I wanted to show you is if we go here to Fancy, remember this one, right? I can go and say code dot, and I'm going to run Visual Studio Code. I was not going to run it. Why not? Code is not recognized. Well, that's not good. This is not installed. Oh, well, then we're doing a live demo of installing Visual Studio Code, then, aren't we? Visual. and Bing, of course, has an animation of this talk. That's why Bing is the best, people, because it knows what you're doing and it comes up with an animated GIF that describes exactly how you feel at this moment, which is great. Visual Studio Code. Hey, cool, it's running. This actually is a really cool thing that this machine became unusable, so now I'm going to go and set up Visual Studio Code right here because it speaks to the idea of who's the audience now, right? Who's the audience? There's us, those of us who are already .NET developers who are thinking about using .NET, and then there's the kids. Because what are the kids learning right now, right? If I go out there and I teach .NET to the kids, I say, hey, kids, we're going to learn .NET. Yay, right? We all go to high schools and stuff and teach people .NET, right? I'm sure you're all doing that in your spare time. I know I do. Hey, kids, let's learn .NET. First, we're going to install Visual Studio. Yay! All right, we're going to download this 2-gig ISO. It's going to be great. We're going to do it over the hotel Wi-Fi, and we're going to install this 2-gig ISO, and we're going to mount it. It's going to be awesome. We're going to fill out a form. We're going to give you, you're going to log in to your Microsoft account. What's that? It's like your Xbox account. Oh, I've got one of those. And it's going to be good. And tomorrow, when it's installed, we're going to do a hello world. It's going to be great, kids. But what have they done already at that time? In the time it took us to do that, they've installed Node and Python and Go and Ruby and literally everything but .NET, right? That's not cool. I've always said, and I came to you all a couple years ago and I said, I want people to be able to go and say apt-get install .NET. I want people to install .NET easily. So I went with my friends at Microsoft and our huge amounts of money that we have, and we threw money at the problem, which is what we do, and we bought .NET. I bought it. It was awesome. Not that expensive. It was about as much as like a Geo Metro. And of course, it redirects here, which makes no sense at all. But doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, because you can say .NET. And then there's even other stuff at like whatever .NET, which is fun to say. And you go here, which is cool because it looks just like that PowerPoint slide, except it has buttons. And I say, hey, kids, go to .NET. And they can scroll down, and they can actually go in here and write code in the browser, which is good if they know how to spell. I can't. And they can run that code. So you can actually go and learn C#. You can go here and say, go to the full tutorial. And there's a whole tutorial here. And you can say what language you picked. And I will judge you if you push like Java. That goes in a database, then you're blocked from using the... But you can go in here, and then each of these different .NET examples has live in the browser. So you can do the whole first day of your workshop if you want to go teach kids how to do C# and stuff inside the browser. Very cool. Okay, so you can go and say .NET, and then you can say download .NET Core, and you can say, hey, I want Linux, and I got like all these different flavors of Linux. Or I can go to Mac or whatever, and I can go and install that on a Mac, and it's cool, and we have an official installer. Or I can go to Windows and do it. Nice. Okay, so I just installed Visual Studio Code, which took about 30 megs. And Visual Studio Code is like, whoa, required stuff is missing. Add that stuff. Do you need that stuff? Cool. And then it's like, oh, hey, C#, maybe you want F#, maybe you want PowerShell. It suggested all of that stuff automatically. Okay? So then, come in here. This is a totally different hello world. Where is this one? Where am I? What's happening? How did I get here? I'm going to open up a new DOS box because it probably updated my path. What's happening? And people are going to say, and that's when we knew that Hanselman had lost it. The whole thing fell apart. Fonts got really big. We were wondering maybe his sugar went bad. He started talking to us like we couldn't hear what was going on inside his head. How can he let them know that he has no inner monologue? There we go. Something's happening. Look at that. So I just installed Visual Studio Code. It automatically figured out that it was .NET. It automatically figured out that it was C#. And I typed console dot, and I got IntelliSense. Not autocomplete. Autocomplete's just I typed that before, right? Like if I type some stuff, hey, this is some stuff I typed, and then I type it again, a lot of editors are like, yeah, I know that. I'm going to do it for you again. Right? And then you're like, did I misspell it? I'm like, I don't really know. Am I in Word? I don't know. This thing's trying to help me. Maybe it's going to help me. Make it async. That'll fix it. Right? That's not IntelliSense. That's just being stupid. What you really want is you want to be able to go like this. Var I equals Scott. Var is clearly, let's see, var is, obviously I is a grammar mistake because it's green. And I type I dot, and then I get stringy things, right? Because var I is clearly a string. But if I change that to like an int, and I type dot, then I get inty things. I didn't save, I didn't build, I'm getting that IntelliSense instantly. Why? What's doing the work? Well, I'm in Visual Studio Code. Visual Studio Code's written in what? What's happening? Right? It's written in Electron. It's written in HTML. It's written in JavaScript. It's written in 200,000 lines of TypeScript. It's magical. So where's all the C-sharp stuff happening? Well, you see this flame down here? The fancy flame? That little flame right there? That is an open source project that Microsoft now works on called OmniSharp. And OmniSharp is great. It's a family of open source projects that lets you run .NET on whatever editor makes you happy. Because there's probably someone in here who uses Emacs. And it's really unfortunate because they look just like us. You can't, they're like Canadians. They look exactly like us. Look to your side. You're gonna discover one of your coworkers is an Emacs person and you never knew. Build a wall, that's all we can do. I ran Emacs once and it's still running. Because I don't know how to exit it. But that's okay, right? Because it's all about choice. It's about choice and it's about inclusivity and diversity, and you should be able to pick the editor that makes you happy. So the IntelliSense, when you typed whatever dot, actually happened in a separate process. A separate process handled that for you. And what made it possible? Roslyn, right? The Roslyn open source compilers. It's actually sending like a little tiny local web service talking over pipes. And as you're typing, it's going and it's automatically compiling that. It's doing static analysis and it's giving you that IntelliSense. So they've externalized the intelligence there. But what this means is that I can go in to a high school or a college or a code camp and I can say, hey folks, let's learn .NET. And we download the 30 megs .NET Core and the 30 megs of Visual Studio Code, and we've got Hello World running in minutes. As a lot of you found if you went through the very nice workshop with Jeff Fritz and Scott Hunter and folks. That's what we're trying to accomplish. But we still want the visual in Visual Studio to happen, don't we? So this is this balance. We want to support the .NET full framework. We want to support Windows. We want to make folks happy. We want to gain new .NET developers. We want to get them up and started and running fast. We want to support things like Docker and get Docker and containers working fast, but also Windows containers and Hyper-V containers that have all of the goodness of Docker with all of the security of Hyper-V. There are a lot of shops out there that aren't Windows shops. I was actually at Oregon State University recently talking to their open source lab. They love .NET, they love C#. And I said, that's great, you're friendly. You're Microsoft friendly. And they said, oh no, we're not Microsoft friendly. We like C#, we like .NET. I don't know what you said about Microsoft. Well, where do you run your apps? Well, we have a Windows server. It's under Anna's desk. Like, they don't even like the server. Like, they treat it like it's like a redheaded stepchild. It's just underneath this desk. And they tolerate it. They tolerate that Windows server, and that's fine. They're a Linux shop. They love PHP and they love Python, but they also like ASP.NET Core. So then I showed them that they can go and do stuff with Docker and Linux, and they're gonna say, that's awesome. Then there'll be a Linux shop, and they're gonna run with Nginx or Apache and Mongo and whatever makes them happy, and then their workloads are gonna include Python and Ruby and Go and PHP and .NET on those servers. While another shop might be all Visual Studio and all full framework and all Windows, and that's cool too. So what we're trying to enable here is choice. The visual is still in Visual Studio, so you're gonna see tooling for publishing to Azure and publishing to clouds, but you're also gonna see a whole new world opening up. If you've noticed the Google platform blog lately, check it out. They've got ASP.NET Core and .NET Core running on the Google Cloud. Awesome. If you saw my talk at Build, we had it running on the Docker Cloud and on Amazon and on Azure, and that's cool. You have designers running Macs, you have developers running Windows, and other ones that might be running Ubuntu. They can go and do real .NET development on all of those things, and we've even seen the preview of SQL Server for Linux happening as well. So whether it be SQL Server or Postgres or Mongo talking to Azure Document DB, the choices that you have are more than ever. And we are more than happy to make those things happen because we want everybody to be happy. Additionally, we want to support all these languages so that you have your choice of platform, your choice of language, and your choice of editor, and that's kind of what we're doing. So you'll see things that will light up great on Windows, but work amazing on other platforms. And then at Connect, in a couple of weeks, we're gonna show you some pretty cool benchmarks, and you can get some previews of that if you go and explore at github.com/ASP.NET/benchmarks, as we are doing our best to make benchmarks. All the code is open source. You can run these benchmarks yourself. You can generate load. You can look at exactly the environment that we use for our perf lab, including both Windows and Linux. And we're seeing some numbers in the millions for plain text benchmarks. And we're seeing ASP.NET Core is going to be extremely competitive. And we'll announce those coming up soon. We're really serious about this. It is a kinder, gentler Death Star. I joke about it. But I've been at Microsoft for now 8 years. And it feels like we've been pushing this rock uphill. And it's been a real challenge to push this rock uphill. Now the rock is rolling down the other side. Hopefully it will not crush any small villages. Maybe that analogy does not work. But what does work, though, is the Microsoft that I work for now is doing everything out in the open. We have the legal folks and the lawyers saying to us, how can we open source this, rather than saying no. We have the .NET Foundation bringing in all sorts of cool projects. We also have really great alternatives to ASP.NET in the form of NancyFX, which is great. Looks like Sinatra, the Rails system, which is appropriate in Vegas, of course. NancyFX is great. Service Stack is a great GPL'd web services framework that has a paid license that you can use for doing web services. There is a whole ecosystem of great .NET software out there that I hope you choose to explore, and maybe you'll get involved. Maybe you don't do .NET open source. Maybe you have done no open source. I want to encourage you, as I end my talk here, to take a look at First Timers Only, which is a website that I put together with Kent Dodds about how you can get involved in open source. I know that it's really challenging to get involved in open source. Sometimes you think you'll do a pull request and they're just gonna slap it down and say that you're stupid, or they're gonna be mean to you, and then you'll never come back and do it again. We've gone and put together a list of places that you can go and learn about doing open source and feel really excited when you do it. And even if you're not technical, all of our docs are open source now. So if you go to ASP.NET Core documentation, you can go and make grammatical changes or spelling changes and do it directly in your browser without even having to download Git and have your first pull request brought into .NET. And there are a lot of people doing .NET open source. As I end, I want to show you this slide here, which is countries and cities and people who did .NET in 2015, 2016, and 2016, when we look at all kinds of feedback on GitHub, whether it be issues or pull requests or comments. People are getting involved in .NET open source more than ever before. Thanks so much for chatting with me today. Let's have fun here at Angle Brackets and Dev Intersections.